what's hilarious about this, I had it in mind to provide you with a Sounds of the City kind of podcast episode, right? So, you know, I'm finding different places that I could record from. I'm looking for ambiance, but I'm also looking for a place that doesn't have, you know, like, that isn't just desolate, you know what I mean? A place that you'll actually get sounds of the city. And at first, at this restaurant, I sat down and they were still, it's a restaurant that toasts their own coffee. So they had their coffee toaster going. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'll be a little patient. Let's see how long that lasts. And as soon as the sounds went off, I was like, all right, we here for it. We about to hear people, you know, chit-chatting, typing, and all these different things. But wasn't expecting a bang-banging. And it has no indication of when it's going to stop. So we're going to rock with it for now. Welcome to Small Chops, a Small Chop podcast. This is your boy, the effable one, Oba, and I am here to discuss a little bit of what's going on in our particular world, but we're not talking too much about like current politics. We know what's going on in America. That's not new to a lot of us. Welcome to the party if it's new to you. But at the end of the day, we are here to discuss just little bite-sized pieces of life as a way of dealing with the world and our experiences in it. I've been taking a little bit of a deeper look into psychology and psychotherapy, and I came across existential therapy. And the reason I came across this is because of the author that I'm going to speak about today. But let me tell you a little bit about existential therapy first. Existential psychotherapy is based upon the fundamental belief that all people experience intra-psychic conflict due to their interaction with certain conditions inherent in human existence, which are known as givens. The theory recognizes at least four primary existential givens. The four are freedom and associated responsibility, death, isolation, and meaningless. A confrontation with any of these aforementioned conditions or givens fills an individual with a type of dread commonly referred to as existential anxiety. And as a society that is coming to terms with its need to explore, its need to share as well as compare notes when it comes to our anxiety and the derivation thereof, I ran into someone named Rollo May. And Rollo May is one of the, I guess, foremost American psychotherapists in the existential sense. His wiki page reads as the following. Rollo Rees May was an American existential psychologist and author of the influential book Love and Will. He is often associated with humanistic psychology and existential philosophy, and along with Viktor Frankl, was a major proponent of existential psychotherapy. In the following clip, we're going to get a little taste of the experiences of psychotherapy, and though the clip is really dated, I think that the information still applies. It's funny when you hear somebody 30 or 40 years ago, even 30 years ago, talk about, you know, we're moving into an age or we're finishing an age and things like that. And I guess in my mind, you would think it's a little faster, but things like that could take, you know, one or two generations. It could really take 50 years for us to really get the postmodern 21st century age kicking. And his information is really impactful when it comes to that. So here is the first clip of Dr. Rollo May.
Would I be correct in assuming that when you speak of anxiety, you don't think of it as a symptom to be removed, but rather as a gateway for exploration into the meaning of life?
Yes. Well, you got that exactly right. Now, I think anxiety is associated with creativity. When you're in a situation of anxiety, you can, of course, run away from it. And that's certainly not constructive. Or you can take a few pills to get you over it, or cocaine, or whatever else you may take.
You could meditate.
You could meditate, but I think none of those things, including meditation, which I happen to believe in, but none of those paths lead you to creative activity. Mm-hmm. What anxiety means is it's as though the world is knocking at your door And you need to create, you need to make something, you need to do something.
I find it really interesting as well as worthwhile to hear someone talk about anxiety as useful, right? Right now we live in a society where being so unsure is the cause of so much pain and frustration that we kind of demonize anxiety. But in this situation, he talks about it as being a useful tool for your personal growth and self-development, especially when it comes to creativity, right? I think that I always bring it back to relationships. And one thing that Clubhouse taught me is there are a lot of people that know the dance of relationship, right? A lot of people that support the traditional way of courting a woman or man's role, woman's role, and things like that, either spent a lot of time investing in the information, spent a lot of time learning and putting all that into practice, or, you know, they come from a household where that tradition was readily available and represented, and it was something that it's not difficult to mimic because that's what you know, that's what you grew up with. And I don't think that there's a lot of space for creativity in that regard, and that's something that I really appreciate about being alive at this time. We are in an age where, like I said before, everything is on the table now. There needs to be a real renegotiation of the social contract, of how the relationship between, you know, two people that are looking to court each other in a traditional or non-traditional sense go about these things. Those of us that don't know the dance steps of a traditional courting process or, you know, courtship, relationship, marriage, blah, 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 are readily available to figure things out, are really readily available to break against those norms and push for something that actually works, right? Push towards something that maybe doesn't work, but it's never been tried before. You know, it's unprecedented. So, you know, whether you have a female CFO that's making, you know, $500,000 and is really successful and is just looking for partnership, and how difficult that might be because traditionally men aren't prepared to see or to consort with a woman of status and power that doesn't really need anything, but is looking for companionship and the like. It's a really new conversation. And that old way of doing things has not served us in ways of understanding what the ramifications or how to approach these kinds of relationships. And the creativity comes in because we're here to discuss. We're here to really explore different options of how that works, whether it's going to be a man living at home, you know, raising children, if that's what they so choose, whether it's adoption, whether it's paternity leave is a very new thing in our generation. And these are all parts of, I think, that creativity that Dr. May speaks on, being able to see a problem, being able to see something and come at it a new way, especially if it's an unprecedented way, being able to explore options that have not been explored before or on a mass scale or anything like that. So I'm really excited to be able to use anxiety in that very, very helpful way. I think that was a really good representation of how anxiety can be useful to us. And, you know, he talks about dulling that anxiety, whether it's with drugs, whether it's with something like meditation. We are looking to reduce the amount of anxiety that we have. And although that could be healthy, it isn't helpful when it comes to pushing us to our best, pushing us to our most dynamic or our most creative. So being able to live with that anxiety healthily or live with a healthy version of anxiety is something that I don't think has really been explored by me. I'm sure it's been out there, but I'm really looking forward to seeing how we can make that happen.
Freedom is also the mother of anxiety. And we try to avoid anxiety by getting rich, by making $100,000 when we're 21 years of age, by becoming millionaires. Now, none of those things lead to the joy, the creativity that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. One can own the world and still be without the inner sense of pleasure, of joy, of courage, of creation.
I often think about the family that I have that lives overseas and what their lives consist of, right? And how, while they may have anxiety, that anxiety looks very different. That anxiety is not nearly as out in the open and obvious and out front. And it isn't due to the fact that they're heavily medicated or that they are using success or in, you know, kind of pushing their problems to the side and just focusing on whatever it is that's going to make them happy. It just looks really different, you know, if you don't have the money to pay the rent or if you don't have, or if you're, you know, your boss sacked you and you don't have income for the next however many days or weeks. Yeah, that's definitely stressful, and especially if you have a child. But that is still very manageable because of the community, because of the understanding between you and whatever cultural norms that they have for income and things like that. And I wondered why is that? Why is that so different? And one thing that I came to is I think that our version of freedom in the States is very different. It looks very different. We are free to use basically as much electricity as we want, as much water as we want. We're free to order, you know, however many meals we want. We're free to buy as much as we want, as much as we can afford. There are just a lot of freedoms that we have that may directly correlate with the amount of anxiety we have. Taking a page out of Esther Perel's book her lectures, she talks intently about how all of the choices that we have has led to an arrested development, right? All of the, when just swiping age, you know, or just being able to readily talk to 10 women that you don't know and potentially find a mate in a bar, at the studio, at the dance class, and on the bus, at the restaurant. Just there's so many options that it is difficult to not only to make the choice, but to stay committed to that choice. And we don't know how to deal with that yet. And I really believe that. So hearing that freedom is the mother of anxiety, that definitely rings true to me, simply because of all the options that we do have. You know, coming from the West, my being able to relocate and work remotely and wanting to be here and wanting to be there and trying to choose, you know, if this place is suitable for me and where I want to be able to live and to work and to travel and to do all these different things is really difficult. So I have to agree that in my own personal life, that freedom has provided a lot of anxiety. I could even tell you when it came to finding my Airbnbs, you know, I'm going to be in one place for about a week and then I'm going to try to go somewhere else, and whether it's going to be someplace that's expensive and then switch up to someplace that's a little bit more affordable. Just the amount of options that I had I didn't enjoy having to look for a place. Those first couple of weeks were cool, but you know, 2 months later, I was just like, oh, how much time am I spending figuring out where I want to live? And having a choice to say, you know what, I'm going to live here for 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, or whatever it is, and let that just be it, opens my mind up, opens up my well of, what do you even call it? My well of like attention span and energy to be put towards other endeavors, especially when it comes to the things that I want to do. I felt like I was really focusing on something that isn't really all that important. So I thought that was a really, really good point that she pointed out. This next clip speaks about joy versus, was that joy versus happiness? And I hear that a lot, especially when people get older, you know. I've heard that a lot from the people that in my life that are really important, and just hearing them talk about, yo, you know what, I just want to be happy. I just want to be left alone. I just want to be left to my devices to be able to do this, that, and a third. That reminds me of Jordan Peterson when he spoke about, we're not here to have a happy life. We're here to have a productive life. And we're here to make those around us hopefully better, hopefully more safe. We're here to provide more love, more, not security, but a little bit more stability in people's lives that need it. And I thought that was a really, really poignant example of choosing one over the other, right? So because you are a child or your significant other has been providing a lot of strife in your life and made life really difficult for you. And you kick them out and you feel that sigh of relief. You do feel good. You do feel, you know, happy at that moment. But is your life going to be filled with joy knowing that your child is without a parent for however long? If it's a month, if it's 10 years, what benefit is it to both of you? Where is the joy if one person is just, you know, on their own, you know, left to their own devices and things like that? I have a really close personal relationship with that example. And I understand that happiness isn't a goal for me. I don't think happiness is something that we should strive for. I think that is a product of doing what you want to do or doing what you should do, doing what you like to do to make your life more fulfilling. I'm really, really a big proponent of finding joy as a byproduct of, you know, doing what makes your vibration higher, doing what makes your heart sing, doing what really, what you're interested in. And that doesn't mean that you don't have to sacrifice. That doesn't mean that you don't have to have a lot of issues and trials and tribulations and things like that, because that is what life is. Life is a video game, and any video game that's on easy mode isn't going to be nearly as fun. It's going to be isn't exciting. Yeah, you get to get through the story, but we don't really want to enjoy that as much, especially a second go around. So I think that those are motivating factors when it comes to life, choosing joy, which is a product of, you know, the things that you're built to do, the ways that you can live life. This next clip is going to talk about how our society has chosen to deal with anxiety. And I think that that is a frustrating point as well, especially in Clubhouse. Clubhouse has been really informative to me, really impactful. I'm enjoying it a lot. There's some really dynamic conversations. I learned how to cook ofada stew. I learned the little secrets about making jollof rice have that smoky taste that, you know, all jollof rice at parties, you know, is known for. So there are different parts of my life that have been positively impacted by this. Now, one thing that I do see is so many people chasing influentialism, if that's a thing, as well as success. You know, there's a lot of how to be a millionaire. There's a lot of how to make money online. There's a lot of a discussion about, you know, success and money and what that looks like. And I don't think that there's much discussion about our common anxieties and how we can turn those into fodder to push us to make better decisions, to push us to make a decision, you know, good or not. And I don't know. I think that, you know, becoming a millionaire, becoming a six-figure income person, whether it's at work, outside of work, is all very valuable and is all life-changing. But it doesn't, for me, lead to the ultimate goal of productivity as well as joy in my life. And the only reason I feel that way now is because I think that I was raised with somebody that did chase success, right? I was raised with somebody that put success on a pedestal, and whether it's scholastic, whether it's at work or something like that, success is how you get happiness. And seeing that person do that for the last 30 years, it turned me off. It really did. And I didn't know that until I was older, until I was in therapy, to see that the way that I'm living life and the things that I choose to do is vastly different than those that raised me. Simply because, you know, our view of life is very different. Our goals and our ambitions are different. And unfortunately, I feel like I live in a world where success is heavily supported by whichever system is going to provide that. But not so much how to find fulfillment, how to find joy, how to engage with the challenges of life. We're getting a lot more of this now, you know, whether it's on YouTube, you know, people talk about productivity, whether it's on podcasts, people like Jocko, what's Jocko's name? Homeboy that was in the military and has a lot to say about just discipline and structure and things like that. I find him very, very, very valuable to listen to. And I'm trying to incorporate all of these things.
I'm not against anybody feeling good or having happy hours. But joy is something different from that. Joy is the zest that you get out of using your talents, your understanding, the totality of your being for great aims. The musicians, the men who wrote music, Mozart and Beethoven and the rest of them, they always showed considerable anxiety because they were in the process of loving beauty, of feeling joy when they heard a beautiful combination of notes. Now that's the kind of feeling that goes with creativity. That's why I say the courage to create. Creation does not come out of simply what you're born with. That must be united with your courage, which both of which cause anxiety, but also great joy.
I found it really valuable hearing the doctor talk about Greek civilization in the 7th and 6th century, and how that started with the search for beauty, the search for truth, and the upliftment of both of those things, as well as, you know, communion with the world and nature and all these different things, and how that society and civilization moved towards how to make life less painful, right? How to make life a little more predictable, how to engage with the notion of security, and how to make that a priority in life, and how to live by those tenets. And that to me is very reflective of the civilization that we live in now. Maybe we're a product of that age, or a reproduction of that age, and I don't find it valuable. I don't find avoiding that pain or creating a life of better security or even stability, I don't find the value in that, simply because I trust in, you know, the universe, God, whatever deity, whatever higher power I subscribe to, because I couldn't tell you. But I don't see the value in creating a life of security while you're still trusting in this power, or trusting in the fact that you beat out millions of other sperm to incarnate here in this world, and the life that you've had so far is a life that you know can use for your betterment, or can, you know, to learn lessons and things like that. I have a hard time subscribing to what this age or what this world has provided for us. And so hopefully this podcast is going to be a place where it gives you just an alternate view or a different perspectives from different professionals and just people that have ideas that are not in the mainstream. I found that story really, really, really impactful. And the new age that he talked about in this upcoming clip is one that doesn't focus on success and money, but talks about, like, you know, the relationship currency and the value of social equity, right? The value in getting to know your neighbors wherever you live, the value in helping some stranger carry their bag, even if it's just a block or two, the value in trying to find our similarities, like George Carlin said, you know what I mean, like, you know, bring attention to the things that we all have in common versus the divisive aspects of our life, because there's so many examples of what divides us, right? The Capitol building is the latest example of that. And that immediately brought me to, hey, you know what? People that look like me wouldn't dare try to do something like that because of the end result. But I don't want to live in that world. I don't want to live in that way of looking at life, like in that dichotomy. And so we are here to just focus on other things than the stock market, right? Focus on other things than our 401ks or our mutual funds or whatever is providing us money for the next 20, 30, 40 years. Because living, I don't know how to live for the next 30 years. I really don't. I see some people doing it. I see them doing it really well. And something tells me that, you know, part of me is going to be really regretful that I didn't, you know, invest or do whatever I could have done at this time or at that time. But at the end of the day, I think I'm going to put more trust into the ability to be successful. I don't ever want to stop working, right? I just want my work to be a little bit more fun. And I don't think that retirement should be a goal or an intended desire. I think that is going to be a byproduct of just like a horse being put out to pasture, you know, I'm like, what's your life going to be like then? Instead, I definitely want to stay engaged, and I want to have that continued challenge. And that new age that you talked about is a great example. I'm not going to talk too much about this next clip because, you know, his definition of philosophy is something that I couldn't add on if I wanted to. Like, it's perfect. It's beautiful. Listen to this.
Philosophy is a deep search for a truth by which I can fulfill myself, by which I can create. Philosophy is the basis of freedom. That's the basis of goodness, too, which seems to not trouble many modern people, but I think it's a great mistake because of all of our lack of ethics, our lack of morality. We need goodness, and we need beauty. All of those are philosophical.
The new age that we have now, the new age that, you know, is characterized by people like, what's this lady's name now? Oh, I can't believe I'm not remembering her name. The one that has this, like, she's channeling some guy and she talks about the vortex and all these different things and just living in positivity. I really appreciate Dr. May's perspective on that, right? You're just ignoring what's going on and you're focusing on this aspect of your life, but that doesn't mean that whatever you're ignoring is just going to disappear. It doesn't. It definitely doesn't. Taxes. That's one of those things that you can't just ignore and focus on the great aspects of life. That's something that's going to come back and bite you in the ass. And I really find value in hearing about how much of a farce this new age feels like, right? We're not here to be happy because that's a very fleeting thing. We're here to hopefully be productive. We're here to spread joy and we're here to make life better for us and those who are coming after us. And that takes work, that takes sacrifice, that takes challenges, that takes life. That just takes a full engagement with all parts of life. And this is another reason why I'm really, really interested in existential psychotherapy. Because it is a full engagement of life and the human being as a whole being that is dealing with all aspects of life, right? I thought that was really valuable. And the New Age just isn't for me. A Course in Miracles is a book that I thought I wanted to read. But as I listen to the people that resonate with me, it doesn't seem to be interesting. And that's not something that I want to get into.
I don't like the New Age movement. I think it's oversimplified, makes everybody feel temporarily happy, but they avoid the real problems. And the New Age can come only as we face anxiety, as we face guilt feeling for our misapprehension of what's the purpose of life, as the way we face death, as a new adventure. Now, none of these things does the New Age talk about. Mm-hmm. It talks about only being gleeful. Joy and freedom come only from the facing of life, the confronting of the difficulties. Now, I believe in life, and I believe in the joy of human existence, but these things cannot be experienced except as we also face the despair, also face the anxiety that every human being has to face if he lives with any creativity at all.
I actually wanted to take my time with this last bit of the interview and talk a little bit about Jean-Paul Sartre, the philosopher that Dr. May is referring to when he talks about his play on Jean-Paul Sartre's play called The Flies.
Zeus says, I made you, so you must obey me. And Orestes says, you made me, but you blundered. You made me free.
The Flies is a remake of a Greek tragedy. And Jean-Paul Sartre thought that this was very appropriate because of the occupation because of Nazi Germany's occupation of France and how much that story correlated with the story in The Flies. And without giving too much away of that story, I want to give you just a couple of really, really quick, some really quick points that I thought were incredible in this story. So the main antagonist in the story is Orestes. And Orestes was never able to be raised in the city in which he was born. When Orestes basically heard that his father was killed by his mother, He decided to venture out back to the city of his origin, of his birth, but he was still an outsider in that city. And being an outsider in that city kind of gave him, it was a gift and a curse, because on one hand, he was able to not be subject to whatever everyone else was being a subject to. And that was basically the death of the king, Agamemnon. And so the whole city was in turmoil and really repentant. They had so much remorse for their king dying, and it was just like a really, really heavy guilt feeling that the people of Argos had felt. And this feeling wasn't shared by all, but most. And in this story, one particular person that did not share that sentiment was Orestes' sister. And his sister, she had a deep hatred for the fact that her father had been murdered, and she knew who the murderers were. Electra was the sister, Electra was his sister, and she had this dream, this goal in her, this absolute, her destiny was to see her father's killers brought to justice. She didn't know how it was going to happen, but she knew that her and her brother were going to make it happen one way or the other. So the story goes with this guy going into the city. He's light. One thing that he keeps talking about is being light, because he isn't being weighed down by what the people around him are being weighed down by, you know, and that is both a gift and a curse. I think that he shows a little bit of disdain for the fact that he is basically a leaf on the wind. He's not tied down by responsibilities or obligated to anybody in his life. And that is giving him a little bit of anxiety, because he doesn't really know his tribe. He doesn't know where he belongs. He doesn't know what he's to do, you know. And this story just, it's such an incredible story about this kid's journey and his freedom, and how that freedom is a gift and a curse, right? Because on one hand, he's free to go as he pleases. He's free to come as he pleases. When he arrives in the city of Argos, he isn't burdened by the guilt that the people there are feeling. But because he's not burdened by that guilt, he doesn't fit in. And so the people do not regard him as one of theirs, even though he was born in this city. When he meets the young lady Electra, he doesn't know that he's her sister, and she doesn't know that she's his brother for a little while. He recognizes it before she does, and eventually he tells her. And she felt like her desire to her destiny to kill her father's killers is coming to fruition, and that is something that she really, really wanted to do. There was Zeus and Jupiter that were referenced in this play, both being the same person, but being referenced in two very different ways, which was interesting. Jupiter was more of the god of death, and Zeus was the god of like divine justice. And at the end of this story, I'm not going to give too much of it away, because I really, really hope somebody picks this up and makes an updated movie about it, because it is, yo, the depth of this story is incredible. The characters, basically the king's killers do meet their end, and Electra, Orestes' sister, is partially responsible for their deaths, but she has so much remorse and guilt that she is she's guilty. But the other person that kills them, I won't tell you who, isn't guilty, because they feel no remorse for the actions they've taken, because they do not live with the morality of others. They do not live with the morality of whatever organization or whatever religion or whatever community. They came to the decision to kill those two completely on their own, and it was a decision that this person was completely okay with, so there was no reason for him to be remorseful. And to see Jupiter and Zeus, to see Jupiter slash Zeus not able to prevent him from killing those two, and also actually not even being able to like dissuade him from that either, was really interesting. I've never seen a story or heard of a story where the gods are really limited by what they can do. I thought that that was a incredible comparison when it comes to how we are subject to the morality of those that brought us up, of the community that we're a part of, and of those that we choose to be around, right? We are beholden to those people. And if we don't follow those same rules and guidelines, then, you know, we are ousted a little bit. We're not looked to as one of the people. And so there were three beings that this story really gives me so much joy to be able to share. And the one is a being on itself. So, you know, a rock can't be anything else but a rock. A rock is just a rock, and there is no definition for a rock. You see the rock, and it is, that being is, you know, it's in its beingness. There's a being for others. So if, you know, I'm walking down the street and suddenly a rock, or I trip over a rock, or there's a cat that crosses the street or something like that, then that is an omen to me. So that being for others is interpreted by others. And that rock, that cat, they cannot, they can't come to the decision to be whatever they want to be. It's only us, humans particularly, that can put that definition onto them, that can make them something we want them to be. And the last being is a being for himself. And that is someone who is exercising that freedom, someone who is free to move around, someone who is free to eat pork if they want to eat pork, someone who is free to fornicate, travel, do whatever they want to do, because that is something that they've come to a decision to do on their own, by their own merit. They are not disrespecting anyone's, they're not going against anyone's rules for their life, because they don't regard anyone's rules for their life. Their life is their own, and that freedom has its own responsibility. That freedom has its own trials and tribulations. And there is something that you really feel a loss of, because you are not free as everyone, or everyone isn't as free as that one being, right? So that being has so much power, but it doesn't always equate to a better life. Oftentimes it equates to a very reclusive life, secluded away from those that they want to be around but can't, because they just simply can't find a common ground with those people. So again, that play is The Flies by philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, Sartre. It was a play put on 1943 during the occupation of France by Nazi Germany. I wanted to end with that kind of little explanation about the play, because of how much that hit home for me. There is nothing that I want more than to have a community, to have like-minded people, to be able to do the things that I truly, genuinely want to do, especially when it comes to love. You think that ideally you can find the person you're looking for doing the things you love to do. So if you love riding bicycles and you join a bike club, hopefully you'll be able to meet your partner doing the same thing. If you like dancing and you go to dance classes or even a club or things like that, hopefully you can find your partner doing those things. But it seems like that's not always the case. And I've heard very differing views from people who are, you know, traditionally doing the successful relationship thing. You know, I've heard people tell me to, if you're looking for somebody, got to buckle down and sit one place for a little while, find that person, do whatever you're going to do with them, or, you know, convince them that what you like to do, or convince them to join you in what you like to do, or to kind of compromise and figure out what they like to do and kind of do that with them, and then they'll do what you want to do. But only sometimes, you know, you're not going to have the freedom or the joy or the ability to really enjoy those things that you want to do. But because you have a partner, you're going to have to exchange. You're going to have to sacrifice. You're going to have to compromise. And these are advices that I don't know. I have no right answer, but I definitely let you know that I am exploring all of these possibilities, and I hope that we can do that together here. This is a bigger chop than I wanted it to be, but Small Chops Pod holds no punches, and I really wanted to make sure that this was an in-depth, or that I really wanted to make sure that this was something worth listening to, and I am proud to be able to provide or introduce some of you or all of you to Dr. Rollo May. And I hope that Love and Will is a book that you research, as well as some of his interviews online. You can always reach me at effable, EFFABL.co. It's where you'll be able to find this podcast and all others, and online, Instagram, effable.co, EFFABL. If you're on the Clubhouse, I am at effable as well. So find me, follow me, follow back. Let's engage in some communication. Let's make this a little better than it was before. This has been Small Chops Pod, y'all. See you soon.
My hands, I put them up. Wave a goodbye to all the times that I thought I wasn't good enough. Wasn't black or wasn't hood enough. Wasn't athletic or better or impressed girls in school enough. I know I could be anything. My God told me that. And my mom told me that. And the silence ain't deafening. If you're cool with yourself and you don't wanna be no one else. Never no time like today, 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 today. Nigga, I feel restrained, 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 restrained. Feel like I've been on a plane, a plane, a plane, a plane, a plane. Finally happy with just me, just me, just me, just me, just me. I know black skin is holy, now I wear my light gold. I know ain't nothing scarier than getting older. I know ain't nothing wrong with ever feeling alone, we all alone, yeah. And tonight I might go have a drink and pray to my God and cry to some Frank, or write some new songs and dance in my room, or go for a drive and fall asleep on the roof. Summer sky so open and so wide, I call to you. Help me break my binds, show me light and show me truth. I never smiled so open or so wide, I cried as cool. Never been so certain in my life what I wanna do. Never no time like today, 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 today. Nigga, I feel restrained, 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 restrained. Feel like I've been on a plane, a plane, a plane, a plane, a plane. Finally happy with just me, just me, just me, just me, just me. I never smiled so open or so wide, I cried as cool.